God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. The Simple Actions Group wishes to extend a warm welcome to all in attendance this evening. Is there anyone here that's a newcomer or is in their first 30 days? We just want to welcome you. This is not to embarrass you. That looks like a no to me. Okay. This group practices the spiritual foundations of anonymity, singleness of purpose, and effective sponsorship. As a group, we believe that Alcoholics Anonymous provides alcoholics with a set of clear directions on precisely how to recover from the illness of alcoholism on the basis of simple actions. These actions are contained in the book Alcoholics Anonymous. It is the purpose of this meeting to carry that clear message and to focus on precisely how to recover from the illness of alcoholism on the basis of AA simple actions. This is the AA preamble. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of men and women who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution. Neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety. The format of this meeting is an open big book step study. As a group, we recognize the power of one alcoholic identifying with another alcoholic, sharing their experience, strength, and hope from the book Alcoholics Anonymous. We encourage you to engage in conversation and ask questions after the meeting pertaining to the step discussed tonight. This evening, we are discussing step one, part two, the mental obsession. Please welcome our panel this evening. We have Chris S. from New Jersey and Julia, I don't know your last name, but she is a local girl. Thanks for being here, y'all. I'm going to go ahead and get started. I'm reading on page five, and then the panel will share for a few minutes each on this reading. Step one, we admitted we were powerless over alcohol and that our lives had become unmanageable. Page five, I woke up. This had to be stopped. I saw I could not take so much as one drink. I was through forever. Before then, I had written lots of sweet promises, but my wife happily observed that this time I meant business, and so I did. Shortly afterward, I came home drunk. There had been no fight. Where had been my high resolve? I simply didn't know. It hadn't even come to mind. Someone had pushed a drink my way, and I had taken it. Was I crazy? I began to wonder, for such an appalling lack of perspective seemed near being just that. Renewing my resolve, I tried again. Some time passed and confidence began to be replaced by cocksureness. I could laugh at the gin mills. Now I had what it takes. One day I walked into a cafe to telephone. In no time, I was beating on the bar, asking myself how it happened. As the whiskey rose to my head, I told myself I would manage better next time, but I might as well get good and drunk then. And I did. Julia, you're up.
Hey, everybody. Julia Alcoholic. I want to first off by saying thank you guys for inviting me and that my sobriety date is October 17th, 2019. And I'm a grateful recovered alcoholic and I'm excited to share tonight. So I'll start us off. So this paragraph from Jump just reminds me and just brings me back to all my relapses. I started drinking alcohol by the time I was 12. And I'll never forget that moment. If you're local and if you are from the 757 area and if you're familiar with Norfolk, I could take you down Granby Street and be like, bam, right there is when I realized that alcohol was going to be the center of my world. And I didn't really know that what that meant at the time. All I knew is that that's what I wanted to chase for the rest of my life. And I really had that idea in my head for a very long time. When I was reading these paragraphs, it took a long time for me to even put two and two together. By the grace of God, I found myself in a therapy office while I was in the United States Army. And like, I went to her and I was like, you know, I'm just feeling some crazy type of way. You know, I'm like, I'm emotional. I don't know. Like my life's unmanageable. I didn't say it in that way, but I was like, my life's unmanageable. And I don't really know what to do. Please help me. And immediately she asked me a few questions. She was like, how much do you drink? And I found that question to be quite odd, but I answered honestly. And from that moment, we went to talking about how emotionally unstable I was to my drinking. And I was like, what is that? You know, like, what is this? Like, what does my drinking have to do with anything? And from that moment, that's when I honestly tried to stop drinking. And for a while, you know, when I first attempted to, you know, stop, I made these high resolves, you know, I truly did. And to no avail, like it says right here, you know, time will pass, right? Time wouldn't pass and I would find myself drinking again. And I couldn't explain to you why. I didn't know what was going on in my body. I couldn't explain, you know, why after a certain amount of time, you know, I kept doing this. But sure enough, after a while, you know, after all these, you know, resolutions and these promises, you know, eventually I had to be honest with myself and say, maybe I do, you know, struggle with this obsession, you know, with alcohol. But I didn't get to that point until I relapsed a few times. And what I believe is like, you know, it takes what it takes for me. You know, if I didn't make these resolves, if I didn't, you know, promise significant others, if I didn't, you know, truly almost put my will to the test, you know, and watch them fail, I don't know if I would have ever gotten to a breaking point to be. So yeah, that's all I got on these paragraphs. This is around this time, this was the beginning of me becoming honest with myself. So that's the only thing that really came to my mind.
Thanks, Julia. Chris.
Hi, everybody. My name is Chris. I'm an alcoholic. Thank you, Julia. You know, Bill was one of these people who was very smart. He was really a smart guy. He had a lot going for him in his earlier days. And yet alcohol had become the rapacious creditor. He talks about in the book, Alcoholics Anonymous. He didn't really understand it until he got sober. Like I didn't understand it until I got sober, that he didn't have any power. And he didn't have choice over whether he drank or not. He lacked choice in whether he drank or not. He could want to not drink. The consequences could be huge. His health, he could, you know, you're going to lose a job. You could lose it. None of the potential consequences were enough to keep him away from alcohol. And my own personal experience was like that. I watched everyone in my life disappear out of my life, families, friends, jobs. And I kept drinking, and it was the alcoholic dysfunction that was driving these people away. And, I just didn't get it until I came in to Alcoholics Anonymous and somebody who had some big book literacy walked me through this stuff and gave me considerations, really serious considerations. I just, you know, it would have been very, very difficult for me to admit that I'm completely defeated by alcohol, that I have nothing to do with whether I drink again or not. You know, like I'm not even going to be there when I drink again. You know, that kind of a concession was really, really difficult for me. But you know, as it moves into more about alcoholism, it makes the case very, very clear that without some type of a spiritual solution, without a power working in me and through me, doing for me what I can't do for myself, alcohol will go back in my body. Doesn't matter that I don't want it to. It doesn't matter that I'm going to AA. It doesn't matter that I've got a coffee commitment. None of that stuff matters. What matters is that I start to become obedient to spiritual principles that will get me in touch with this power that seems to solve the problem. I can't even really explain it better than that. This power solves the problem, and I stay away from alcohol. And Bill went way down the scale before he came to that conclusion, and it was the Oxford group people that got him in touch with a power greater than himself. It was just a strange set of circumstances. And then he architected Alcoholics Anonymous based on what he had learned in the Oxford group into something that the alcoholics could swallow, and I'm really, really grateful for the big book, and I'm grateful to be at this meeting here tonight.
Thank y'all. That was great. I'm going to continue reading on page 7. It relieved me somewhat to learn that in alcoholics, the will is amazingly weakened when it comes to combating liquor, though it often remains strong in other respects. My incredible behavior in the face of a desperate desire to stop was explained. Understanding myself now, I fared forth in high hope. For 3 or 4 months, the goose hung high. I went to town regularly and even made a little money. Surely this was the answer, self-knowledge. Julia?
This part specifically really gets me fired up, because for a long time, I relied on my self-knowledge to not drink. And like most of us, or at least in my experience, like I learned it was a little lengthy, but pretty quickly that avails me absolutely nothing. However, I had to hit a bottom of self through my own means to finally accept that. And what that looked like for me was, once I tried to stop and relapsed countless times, and finally, Julia decided that, you know what, fine. They might be right where I am powerless over this liquid, but I can still stop on my own self-will. And these are the thoughts that came through my head. And I found myself to be a year dry, a year literally white-knuckling sobriety, no program, no nothing, just trying to raw dog reality, lack of better terms. And and it just didn't work. Like it says in this literature and like it says in this text, I tried the yoga. I'm not a churchgoer. I try to go back to church. I hate church. That was the alcoholic I was, and I tried all these things because my ego was so inflamed at that point in my life, where like I could not bear down the idea that I needed something greater than myself to help me with something in this world, right? And that's just me being honest of how I thought when I first came in Alcoholics Anonymous. But by the grace of God today, I had to really exacerbate that idea, really understand that no matter what I try to do, I cannot solve my own problem. And this problem is alcohol. And so sure enough, I think maybe in the paragraphs after this, I hit that bottom, and no matter what I've tried, like it's true. Like I was going to drink again. And I had to experience that wholeheartedly in my own experience to finally surrender, to finally be given that gift of desperation to try something different, because what I had going for me was not work. So thanks.
All right, Chris.
Yes. Yeah, so I work with a lot of people, and one of the things that I've learned over the long haul is when someone really gets step one, when there's a real concession to step one, like a real visceral concession to step one, I don't have any problem with them doing 4 steps or amends or prayer or meditation or working with other people because they get it. But this is really, really a hard thing to get. There's a great line in the 12 of 12, who among us wishes to admit complete defeat? Glass in hand, we've warped our minds to such a state that only an act of divine providence can save us from this obsession. Only an act of God can keep me from drinking. Nobody wants to admit that. And 80% of the people in AA don't, but to really, really get that is a very powerful experience. It's a full surrender. I'll tell a quick story. I was desperate to separate from alcohol, or desperate to separate from alcohol. And I signed myself into a 28-day treatment center. I signed myself in. There was no outside pressure. I called them up and I said, please take me. And I went in there and I did the 28 days. And when I was getting released, they said that I should probably go to some AA meetings and I should definitely come back for aftercare, you know, the IOP. So I did both of those things. Now you got to understand, I didn't want to do any of that. I don't like lights. I don't like people telling me what to do. I don't like being locked up. You know, I don't like any of that, but I was so desperate to separate from alcohol that I did all of it. And I'm going to outpatient and I'm going to AA and I'm driving to an AA meeting. And the thought crosses my mind. I've got about almost 3 months. Thought crosses my mind that, you know, this AA thing, I'll bet you if I bought a gallon of vodka and started drinking it, I would feel so bad that I would rocket back to Alcoholics Anonymous. And, you know, I'm not really doing a great job. I'm not really reaching, you know, this would be the catalyst that would make me a great AA member. Okay. So what I did was I bought a gallon of vodka and I drank it to improve my sobriety. Now this all made a lot of sense. I'm drink one. All makes a lot of sense. Drink two. I'm going to tell people at the AA meetings that this, what a great idea this was. Drink three, I start to get drunk and it washes over me. And Bill talked about beating the bar, asking himself how it had happened again. And that's what I was doing. I was going, oh my God, I'm drinking again. How the hell did this happen? And what it was it was a manifestation. It was a manifestation of the obsession. And an obsession is a thought that leapfrogs over all the other thoughts. You know, I'm going to go to a meeting today. I'm going to call my sponsor. I've got the coffee commitment. I'm going to be working on my fourth step. I'm going to stop at the liquor store and get a gallon of vodka. Boom, like that. Suddenly, the thought crosses my mind to buy a gallon of vodka. Suddenly. You know, how am I going to protect myself against suddenly? You know, suddenly doesn't let you call your sponsor. suddenly, or no thought at all. You know, it talks later on, no thought at all. We start drinking with no thought at all. You know, how are you going to protect yourself against no thought at all? So again, what I need to be is I need to be connected to a power that solves this problem. It solves this problem. And It's what Bill learned by hanging out in the churches with the Oxford Group people, because they were really busy. Anyway, that's.
Thanks, Chris. Thanks, Julia. We're going to skip over to page 24. The fact is that most alcoholics, for reasons yet obscure, have lost the power of choice in drink. Our so-called willpower becomes practically non-existent. We are unable at certain times to bring into our consciousness with sufficient force the memory of the suffering and humiliation of even a week or a month ago. We are without defense against the first drink. The almost certain consequences that follow taking even a glass of beer do not crowd into the mind to deter us. If these thoughts occur, they are hazy and readily supplanted with the old threadbare idea that this time we shall handle ourselves like other people. There is a complete failure of the kind of defense that keeps one from putting his hand on a hot stove.
I remember, you know, I honestly, when I was exposed to Alcoholics Anonymous in the beginning for the first time, I did not believe anything that the big book had to say, anything that anyone had to offer. Not until I had my own experience, right? Not until I literally tested everything that I could to be broken to a point where I could actually receive, you know, to actually listen. And I'll never forget when I was, when they described, like, when we are literally defenseless against the first drink. I didn't know exactly what that looked like or what that felt like in context until it happened. And like it says here, when not a thought comes in my head, nothing, it stops me before taking this drink. And I remember I was at a bar and I was separated from alcohol for a while. And I was just doing what I was doing. You know, it says in the back somewhere, in, I don't know if it's forward or backwards, but, you know, I was confident, you know, I was confident around alcohol. I was confident around like being around my friends who are still drinking. Right. I was, you know, thinking that I had this in the bag on my own. And then sure enough, I was just talking with a friend, and before I knew it, there was this glass of beer in my hand. And for the first time in my life, I was like, I consciously am trying to self-will my own sobriety. How did this happen again? You know, they told me this, like I've heard this somewhere. And here I am about to take a drink once more. And it was in that moment that I truly conceded and truly realized that I am completely powerless over that first drink, that I need something other than myself. But it wasn't until that moment, it wasn't until I had my own experience that I can finally surrender to that idea. And I'm so grateful that I did. And I'm so grateful that it's written here, because, you know, I can relate in so easily now. You know, I can relate to that. And that assures me that I'm in the right place. So that's all.
So seventh grade, I'm in seventh grade, right? So my first year in middle school, I'm a little some bitch. I'm about 90 pounds soaking wet. And there was this big doofy kid, you know, we called him Baby Huey. His name was Huey. And we called him Baby Huey. And everybody picked on him. He was like 180 pounds. He was like, and one of the things that I would do to play tricks on him was we had lockers in the hallways, and the lockers had a combination lock. So Huey'd be like trying to get something out of his locker, and I'd come up behind him and I'd slam his locker shut. And that'd cause him to, he'd be good, damn it, you know, and he'd have to do the combination all over again. And I'd walk away laughing, you know, because I'm a smart ass. Well, this one day I slammed Huey's locker shut, and Huey was having a bad day. Okay, because here's what he did. He grabbed me, pushed me across the hall, and he grabbed me by the shoulders and started slapping my head up against the wall, like furious. Now, if you know anything about middle school architecture and what they make the walls out of, they're concrete block, right? So he literally knocked me unconscious, slapping my head up against the wall. And I came to, and classes had already started, and the hall was empty. And I like staggered up, and I tried to figure out which way to go. And I made it back into my class, concussed, okay? Now, what's the point of this story? I got to tell you, I never slammed Huey's locker shut ever again after that. You understand? When I was walking down the hall and I saw Huey in his locker, I would walk all the way around to the other side of the hall just in case somebody else was going to slam his locker shut and he turned around and think it was me. I had an adequate mental defense against slamming Huey's locker shut. I didn't have to get a sponsor. I didn't have to do 12 steps. I was clear, never slam his locker shut. Again, it will render you unconscious. Now, here's the thing. I was a daily blackout drinker. I drank every single night for eight of my last years. I would drink myself into unconsciousness, and I would fall out of my chair onto a hardwood floor, and I would come to about 1 a.m. and try to stagger into bed, because I would pass out with a glass in my hand sitting at my desk. Every single day, every single night, I would land on the floor, and then I'd feel terrible the next day. I did not have an adequate mental defense against separating from alcohol. I'm all in with this Alcoholics Anonymous thing, and nobody says it better than Bill. The more times I read those particular paragraphs, the more pertinent they are to me, and the more beautifully worded they are to me. That's exactly what my experience is. That's all.
All right, we're going to continue on page 30. Most of us have been unwilling to admit we were real alcoholics. No person likes to think he is bodily and mentally different from his fellows. Therefore, it is not surprising that our drinking careers have been characterized by countless vain attempts to prove we could drink like other people. The idea that somehow, someday, he will control and enjoy his drinking is the great obsession of every abnormal drinker. The persistence of this illusion is astonishing. Many pursue it into the gates of insanity or death. We learned that we had to fully concede to our innermost selves that we were alcoholics. This is the first step in recovery. The delusion that we are like other people, or presently may be, has to be smashed. We alcoholics are men and women who have lost the ability to control our drinking. We know that no real alcoholic ever recovers control. All of us felt at times that we were regaining control, but such intervals, usually brief, were inevitably followed by still less control, which led in time to pitiful and incomprehensible demoralization. We are convinced to a man that alcoholics of our type are in the grip of a progressive illness. Over any considerable period, we get worse, never better.
You're muted, Julia.
I can't hear, Julia.
My bad. I'll start from the top. Yeah. Right, so what made me giggle about this part of these paragraphs right here was where it says all of us felt at times that we were regaining control, but such intervals usually brief. I remember when I thought that I had control over my drinking is when I figured out when to put myself right. I'll never forget that like span of like a month, right? I was like, okay, so I keep, you know, pissing people off. I keep breaking tables. I keep blacking out. You know, I keep pissing, you know, literally doing insane things. So that's fine. Let me just put myself to bed, you know, before I do something that I'm going to regret. And I'll never forget it. It was always like literally like maybe 2 or 3 weeks at a time where I'd be like, I put myself to bed before. And I would wake up and be like, I've made it. Like my alcoholic brain really thought this. I was like, I've made it. Like, I know how to drink now, you know? But sure enough, like in such intervals, it was only a matter of time. Like that was short lived. Sure enough, like after a while, like I could not stop, once I started, I couldn't stop. And, you know, I try, and if I'm honest about my drinking, like I've tried to control, and to drink like other people since I could, you know, like I said, I started drinking really early. Like the first time I put myself on a break from alcohol, I was like 15 years old. And it's because I said something to a friend that was just despicable. And I was like, whoa, Julia, you need to calm down. And like, maybe you should relax a little bit. But I didn't know what was happening. Like, I didn't know that qualified me as an alcoholic until I came into these rooms. And when I read these, I was like, oh man, like, you know, like this is me, you know, like I've been trying to do this thing for my whole life. And I had no idea. I had absolutely no idea. I was just living like this. And then I read this, I was like, okay, maybe Alcoholics Anonymous is onto something because they're explaining me in the word. I do believe we never get better, only worse. That's just my experience. But it took what it took for me to smash that delusion, honestly. Like it just did. And until I hit that point, I was just gonna continue drinking like that. But luckily here I can identify in.
You know, I really like the language Bill uses. And yeah, he was like a failed lawyer, stockbroker guy. So he understood language, and he did a million drafts of the big book. And I think he was very, very careful with what he said. And a lot of the language in there is real alcoholic, alcoholics of our type, you know, the hopeless alcoholic. And he's trying to identify a class of people as hopeless or real alcoholics. And what that means is they lack power, choice, and control. So lack of choice is I have nothing to do with when alcohol goes back in my body. Lack of control means once I start drinking, the first drink asks for the second insists on the third demands a fourth, and I want the 16th drink more than I wanted the 15th drink. Okay, that's choice and control. And those two things equate to power. I don't have any power. I don't have any power about when alcohol goes in my body, and I'd have no power about any control once it does. And I don't want to admit that because I want to find a way where I can get alcohol to do this for me like it used to. You know, just like all the weight of the world drops off me, and all of a sudden, all things that are wrong are made right. And I'm larger than life, and I don't have a care in the world. I'm still looking for a way for alcohol to do that for me, but I've crossed the line into powerlessness where it's never going to happen again. So I have to quit drinking for good and for all. None of this day at a time crap. I've got to make a decision that alcohol can never go back in my body again. And, you know, what do I need to do to get it connected to this power? What do I need to do? How do you do these steps? That's really where I have to be able to survive alcoholism. It's a mess. It's a terrible illness. He talks about it being an illness. It's a terrible illness. I can't tell you the amount of people I've seen die from it. I can't tell you the untold suffering that I've seen because I've stayed very active for decades, you know, helping people. And it really is a terrible thing to be afflicted with. And, you know, I don't want to engage in the solution. Your choice is going to be to go on to the bitter end, blotting out of your mind, you know, how horrible life is, or accept life on spiritual terms. And that's a hard decision for me, you know, spiritual terms, just what do you mean by that? You know, and it's the insanity, the insanity of alcoholism, the unmanageability of alcoholism makes it really, really difficult for me to engage in the things that are going to help me recover from it.
I unmuted. Am I unmuted? I am. Somebody, Grant, thank you. All right, we're picking up on page 41. As soon as I regained my ability to think, I went carefully over that evening in Washington. Not only had I been off guard, I had made no fight whatever against the first drink. This time, I had not thought of the consequences at all. I had commenced to drink as carelessly as though the cocktails were ginger ale. I now remember what my alcoholic friends had told me, how they prophesied that if I had an alcoholic mind, the time and place would come. I would drink again. They had said that though I did raise a defense, it would one day give way before some trivial reason for having a drink. Well, just that did happen and more. For what I had learned of alcoholism did not occur to me at all. I knew from that moment that I had an alcoholic mind. I saw that willpower and self-knowledge would not help in those strange mental blank spots. I had never been able to understand people who said that a problem had them hopelessly defeated. I knew then it was a crushing blow. Julia?
Honestly, it's those mental blank spots that keeps me in the rooms today. I had firsthand experience with these mental blank spots, can always get, you know, constant relapses, always getting blacked out, all these things. And it says here, like, the time without any help from a higher power, anything, like, I will drink again. And that's just my experience. And I hear a lot of people say, like, we have this built-in forgetter. I agree, you know, if I don't stay here, I will drink again. Like, I know that. Like, I can admit that to myself today. And it's Alcoholics Anonymous that saves my life every day, because I don't, on my own, I just don't have it, you know, and I know that. And those mental blank spots terrify me. I've experienced them, you know, I know what that looks like. I know what that feels like. And I don't want to feel that way. I don't want to drink again. And if it's not for these rooms, like, I will. And it tells me that. And that's been my experience. So I'm just grateful that these words exist and like that I'm here, because like I felt hopelessly defeated before, and I don't want to feel that since I've been in the rooms. Like, I haven't.
So it's sometime in 1984, right? And I've got to go down to motor vehicle because I finally got all the paperwork I need to get my driver's license back after a third DUI. Right, I'd done the time, I'd done the pay, the fines, all my ducks are in a row, and I've got to go down to motor vehicle and present all this stuff, and then I'll get my slip of paper that will allow me to get my driver's license back. Now I go down and I'm drinking on the way down. I'm driving and I'm drinking and driving to go get my driver's license back for a third DUI, right? And I remember walking up to this woman, and I'm I'm pissed, right? Because they make me do all this stuff. You know, I got to do all the fines and all, you know. And I'm standing in line, and finally I get to talk to this woman, and I go, and I've got this, and here's my canceled check, and this is my proof of this, and this is my insurance, and this. Now give me my slip so I can get my license back. And she looks at me, she leans forward, and she starts sniffing. She starts going, she goes, "You smell like vodka. You're getting your driver's license back, and you're smelling like, for a third DUI, you're smelling like vodka. Did you drive here?" You know, and I'm like, "No, you know, listening from last night, you know, only had two last night." And now she had to give me the slip, right? And she had to. So I remember she handed it to me, and I grabbed it, and she was reluctant to let it go. You know, because she knew that with that slip, I was going to be able to drive again. She's trying to protect humanity. Now here's the thing. I'm not a dumb guy, right? Where on the stupid meter would you find getting drunk, going to motor vehicle to get your driver's license back for a DUI? Where on the stupid meter would that be? That'd be pretty high up into the red, right? On the stupid meter. Well, I'm not stupid. I'm powerless. You know what I mean? And it's just, I've got experience after experience after experience like that. And yet I come into Alcoholics Anonymous and, you know, I'm defiant and, you know, I'm obstinate and I want to argue with you and I want to know why do I have to do this? And it's just, it's part of just my alcoholism. It's all alcoholic, you know? Anyway, that's it.
Thank you both. We are going to continue on page 43. Once more, the alcoholic at certain times has no effective mental defense against the first drink. Except in a few rare cases, neither he nor any other human being can provide such a defense. His defense must come from a higher power.
I remember when I first, I came in and I honestly had no idea what alcohol, I really didn't. All I know is like, I hit a bottom and I was like, I haven't tried this one yet. Let me go ahead and give it a shot, you know? And we get to like this higher power thing. And like, I am like, yes, I relate. Yes. Like I'm a dipshit. Yes. I'm powerless. Yes. I keep doing the same old, like, you know, please help me. And then we get to this higher power business, right? I'm like, I have the obsession check. My life's powerless check. My life's definitely unmanageable. We can see that check, you know, but like, then we get to this like, okay, great. Now that you know that, you know, now we need to get in the business of a higher power. You know, and I just didn't, it took a minute and I'm just being honest. It took a long time for me to get around to that, but I just had to rely on the fact that like, based off of my behaviors, countless, numerous times of the same stuff over and over again, that I literally had no other option. I had no other option. And you know, luckily like the big book is so gracious, right? And it says that we just need a higher power to our understanding, you know, and I could work with something like that. And it took practice for me, you know, it took a lot of surrendering, a lot of, you know, just trusting, a lot of faith, you know, over time. Like this didn't happen for me overnight. Like this took consistent, you know, going to meetings, calling my sponsor, just patience, you know, and constantly taking my will back, giving it back, taking it back, all this stuff, believing, not believing, you know, but, you know, that's just a part of the process for me. And that's what it looked like. So it was like our defense must come from a higher power. You know, like today I do have a higher power that works for me and it does keep me sober. But it took a while for me to trust that. And I'm just being honest. And like, you know, luckily we have something written out. I have something written out for me that saves my life, that keeps me sober, that lifts the mental obsession. And you know, the closer I get to my higher power, the further away from drink I just am. And that's just my truth today. And I'm just grateful for that. So that's all I got on that.
So they call it a type of insanity, right? Now, my sister is a medieval historian. There's like one job a year in the world for medieval historians. But she's a medieval historian. And I was talking to her one time about insanity. And she said, it's funny, you know, if you follow the word origin, you know, you would think it comes from the psychology or medical or something like insanity, but really it comes from the legal, the legal professions. And what happened is, you know, during the medieval times, there was some really serious penalties for stealing. Okay, like if you got caught stealing, the penalty would be to have your hands chopped off, right? So there was a bunch of judges that you know, people are coming up to them guilty of stealing, and some of these people didn't have the mental acuity. You know, they're mentally challenged, and the judges could see that they just didn't know right from wrong. You know, they're walking down the street and they see an apple on an apple cart and they grab it because they're hungry. They don't have the capacity to understand that it's wrong. They don't have the ability to access right and wrong, good and bad, right? So they develop the insanity defense. So if you can convince somebody that you were insane and you didn't have access to power, choice, and control over stealing, you know, you wouldn't get your hands chopped off. So they're talking about us having an insanity where it concerns alcohol. And that is absolutely true for me. Sometimes I lie to myself, and what really trips me up is at certain time, I don't seem to have the power, the choice, the control. Sometimes I do seem, but I'm not in charge of what times those are going to be. So it's as good as no power, choice, and control. And I've got to fully concede this. That's my first step. If I can get that, that gives me the power to move into step two. Step two gives me the power to move into step three. Step three gives me the power to move into step four. And I can get an awakening at the end of all this where I can see things sanely. You know, the sanity will have been restored to me. You know, but and they say it's, you know, by God. And I've got no reason to argue with that today. That's been my experience.
All right. Thank you so much. That was the last reading for tonight. We have completed step one. Hopefully everyone has an understanding of what the problem is. We're diagnosing the problem. I have a body that will never keep me from the second drink and a mind that can never keep me from the first drink. And we can see, and I can see where we're going. The delusion that we are like other people or presently may be. What that tells me is that even after I've been separated from alcohol, I am not like other people. Lack of power is my dilemma. I am going to have to learn how to plug into power. I am a battery that cannot hold a charge. I need to plug in over and over again. I need to cultivate closeness with this power. How am I going to do it? You'll have to come back to find out. Is there anybody who'd like to button us up on step one? How about you, Jen? I don't know how to unmute you. David, could somebody do it?
Everyone's allowed to unmute.
Unmute yourself. Right on. Okay.
Hello.
Hello.
Hi. I'm Jen. I'm an alcoholic, and I just loved what I heard tonight. You know, it was important for me to track back in my own drinking history to see where I had lost the ability to make a decision and follow it through with action as it pertained to alcohol, because I had lost that ability long before I thought I did. You know, I could track back to my 19th birthday. I just started dating this guy and I really liked him. And I was putting on my makeup and we were getting ready to go to the club. I was going to drink, you know, ironically legally for the first time. So I wanted to look good while I, you know, got drunk. And anyways, as I was putting on my makeup, I said to myself, you know, you better not get drunk tonight, because when you get drunk, you do things that make boys break up with you. And I meant it. And that was a thought, that was a clear, rational, absolutely sane thought based on my own experience. And 4 hours later, I was getting drunk, doing things that was going to make that boy break up with me. You see, at 19, I had already lost the ability to make a decision and follow it through with action as it pertained to alcohol. The mental obsession already, I had developed that curious mental twist that they talk about in Bill's story. I had already acquired that delusion. And I would chase that effect for another, I came into Alcoholics Anonymous at 25. So I went down pretty quick, which is good. I'm glad I did. But, you know, that mental obsession is the thing that'll keep me going back to the drink. And I don't have, I just love that. Like, I'm not stupid. I'm powerless, you know? And I think for a long time, I was always trying to find what was going to give me power. You know, is it going to be the yoga? I know it's going to be beer only. You know, I'm only going to smoke pot now because potheads never do any damage. They're just fun and fat, and I'll do that. And then, you know, and none of that worked, right? Like, but I had to try all my own solutions before I was willing to do this, because this is pretty drastic. And I'm someone who's always looking for the easier, softer way, and coming in here and, you know, and I'm a smart girl. I read all the 12 steps, not just the first one or the second one. Wait a minute. Step 9. I don't know about that. Step 4. No, like, you know, so I had to be pretty much done and surrendered before I could go on to the other steps. Anyways, thanks for letting me share. Bye.
Thanks, Jen. David, do you have anything to add to finish us up?
I'm an alcoholic. My name is David. I'm grateful to be here. Grateful to be sober tonight. Thank you all so much. When Julia was talking about putting herself to bed, I love that. You know, all those little things that we do when we finally find the secret. I was instantly propelled back into a bar in Washington, D.C., where I had a job, and there was a dude there that I used to drink with. And he would leave the bar every night at 10:30, no matter what. He would say, no matter how drunk he was or no matter how much fun was going on, he's like, I got to be home before MASH comes on. And that was his thing. He would just make sure he got into his easy chair and he would put on a rerun of MASH and then pass out. And that way he could get up at 5:30 in the morning and go to work. Anyway, I thought that was genius. That makes sense. And the way that Chris phrased it with power, choice, and control. I mean, that's the thing. I wanted off this ride. I had drank all the fun out of drinking by the time I was 20. I was absolutely disgusted with the results that I was getting, the things that I'm capable of saying and doing under the influence of alcohol. I want off the ride. It is not fun anymore. Let me off. I've got to quit. I wanted to quit. And it's impossible for me to control and enjoy my drinking. I was like was mentioned, I was sober many years before I realized that when I'm controlling my drinking, it is very unpleasant. I do not like controlling my drinking, watching my drinks going, you know what I mean? Like, I can't be in the easy chair at 11 p.m. because something else is happening. And when I'm enjoying my drinking, it doesn't look anything like control. I mean, if you could follow me around and videotape me drinking, you would not say, oh, what a wonderful example of control and restraint that gentleman has. I like drinking out of control. I only like drinking out of control. That's just drinking. But the thing for me, and I came to Alcoholics Anonymous at age 22 with a qualifying story, certainly. But I wanted to stop. But what I could not accept for the next 6 years in and out of Alcoholics Anonymous is that I am personally powerless over alcohol, that it's not really up to me. Left to my own devices, I will drink again. And I could not accept that. If I can't put my mind to it, buddy, it can't be done because I got a great mind. So anyway, I, like everybody else, I had to take the beating that alcohol and untreated alcoholism had for me in order to get to that place where I could just say, what do I have to do? What do I have to do? And then do it. I think Clancy says, until I was ready to take actions that I didn't even believe would work, I didn't get And that's absolutely my experience. So I'm a reluctant member of Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm a begrudging member of an Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm a yeah, but member of Alcoholics Anonymous. But alcoholism continues to beat me into a state of reasonableness. And the good news about AA is that we got the next move figured out. You know what I mean? Like nobody here is scratching their head going, hey, I wonder what we should do after we decide we're powerless. We've got a whole another 11 steps to work after that. And it's brilliant. And I haven't added anything to Alcoholics Anonymous since I've been here, but it's given me so much. Thank you.
Thanks, David. We are going to post the code for the seventh tradition. The seventh tradition states every AA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. While contributions cover each group's rent and other expenses, the seventh tradition is essential at every level of AA service. It is both a privilege and a responsibility for groups and members to ensure that not only their group, but also their inner group, central office, local services, district area, and the general service office remain self-supporting. This keeps AA free of outside influences that might divert us from our primary purpose, to help the alcoholic who still suffers. Announcements. Are there any AA-related announcements? I don't see anything going on. Does anybody else? Okay. Simple Actions is a home group. If you are interested in joining our home group, please see one of us after the meeting. Home group members, please raise your hands. If you're shy, we have an email, info@simpleactions.net. Sponsorship in AA is yours for the asking. We urge you, do not delay. If you have questions or would like additional information about sponsorship, I will be available right here after we close the meeting. Please feel free to talk to me. Or again, if you're shy, send an email. We'll hook you up that way. In closing, can we please thank Julia and Chris for joining us this evening? Thank y'all. That was great. And Leanne has volunteered to read the last few paragraphs on page 164. Leanne?
Hey, everybody. My name's Leanne. I'm an alcoholic. Vision for you. Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order, but obviously you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you until then.
All right. We have a nice way of closing. I think everyone is going to be unmuted. It'll get ugly and jangly, but let's do it anyway. We're closing with the Lord's Prayer. Our Father,
who
art in heaven,
hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us.
Lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil.
For thine is the kingdom,
the power, and the glory,
forever and ever. Amen. Thanks, everybody. Mike, is your hand up?